Welcome back to Popcorn Book Club. It's still being November, just a little bit. We are still talking V for Vendetta, the graphic novel. We have made it to book three, the final part of the graphic novel by Alan Moore and illustrated by David Lloyd. The most dramatic and I will say at some moments insane. And also I also think where it departs the most from the movie, which we'll describe next week. So book three, which is called The Land of Do As You Please, begins with the symphony of V blowing up Jordan Tower, which I think that we'll get into the timeline of the movie, which I think is a little cleaner.
But yeah, I really liked it.
I really like the timeline of the movie. But in this, we also have this on November. He blows up Jordan Tower on November 5th. And then November 6th, sort of the land of do as you please anarchy stuff sort of begins. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it wasn't anarchy. It was chaos.
Chaos, which he hopes will become
leads to mm-hmm. anarchy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really important that they made that distinction because I think a lot of people don't fully understand what anarchy is as a philosophy, as opposed to just like colloquial usage of the word anarchy. We're like, no one's in charge. It's anarchy. And that's not the same thing.
Yes.
I don't know. Do you have a good understanding of what anarchy is? Because I'm not actually sure I know what it looks like in practice.
I don't think I know what it looks like in practice. And I think I did not have a very good understanding of it prior to reading this book, because my idea of anarchy came from like a meme that I saw on MySpace in like 2005.
Yeah.
It was like, anarchy's bad because it's people running around. And you know what happens when everybody's running around? Scraped knees. And I was like, oh, that sounds terrible.
I just think about The Purge. Like, it's like, oh, it's one day of anarchy, no rules. And it's just a bunch of murder daddies everywhere.
Murder daddies, murder mommies, murder cousins, fourth move.
Murder uncles.
I will say by the end of this book, things do not appear to be getting better. Unless we all felt the catharsis that I guess Alan Moore wanted us to feel by watching a wealthy woman get raped by a group of homeless men. A very weird ending to a book, but okay, I guess that is what Alan Moore wanted to end on.
I think Alan Moore is very bad on women, and I want to talk about that a little later as a full thing. But I also want to say one thing that I think is starkly different from both the film and sort of how the character of V has been portrayed. He's not like a great guy. He's not like the hero.
No.
He's like,
awful.
He has no charm about him whatsoever. Like, for me, in the book, he's like, stop with the monologues, dude.
And
like,
thank you. Not just monologuing, but deeply weird.
Yes.
And like, not in a good way.
There's a lot of guy in your MFA energy coming from V.
Yes.
Yes.
There's
big
this
time.
Point at which Evie was like, can you just say what you mean? And I was like, thank you. Thank you for actually saying that.
Yeah.
But like, I think this is a really good point where I've been seeing a lot of stuff like on TikTok, because I'm super cool and young and on TikTok, about how media literacy means that you don't necessarily, just because somebody is the main character, have to identify with them. And just because somebody's the main character does not mean that they are correct.
Yeah.
And I think that V is a flawed person. I think we can all agree that V is a deeply flawed person.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not always correct. And this monologuing at Evie and not answering any questions directly is just frankly infuriating.
He also gaslit her in the most horrifying way I can imagine anybody being gaslit.
I mean, he plays games with her in ways that I think the movie tries to make justifiable. And like, in the grand scheme of things, I would argue that like symbolically they succeed. In the book, he comes off as much less charming, much more insane, with a far less like consistent ideology. And I think that Evie becomes, spoiler alert, becoming V at the end makes more sense if V is like a deeply imperfect symbol and unlikable character.
Right. And it also has to do with the idea that anarchy has two sides, destruction and creation. And he was destruction and she was creation. And next week when we talk about the movie, I have more things that I want to say about that.
So the thing that I wanted to focus on first about book three is a character that's not in the movie, Rosemary. who goes through a journey. Yes. A brief recap. Rosemary is in an abusive marriage with the head of the ear, who listens into all the phone tapping. He dies. And then she starts sleeping with Roger Dascombe, who's the head of the visual Jordan Tower, the mouth. Thank you. He also dies. People think she's deeply cursed because the last two dudes she slept with died. She is miserable at the sad cabaret. She is forced to work as a burlesque dancer. A dancer, non-consensually, in the sense that she does not want to do it, and she's doing it only for money that she desperately needs. And then she's driven to going full taxi driver and murdering Adam Susan in the street. This is on book three. And in a way that
I was talking about Taxi Driver. Oh, that was a joke.
Sorry. In a way that V then seems to argue that he orchestrated the whole thing because she is the last rose he cultivated. What did you guys make of this subplot?
I mean, she's what a sad, sad character. Have that be her kind of whole arc of like, you know, being subjugated to the intense violent patriarchy of this particular society, having her husband killed, but being sad about that loss too, to like sit with that loss of this person who was like deeply abusive to her as well. And then to like go and just straight up point blank shoot that man.
And the worst part for me is she doesn't even have any like agency in this because then they frame it as the fact that she was all just part of V's scheme, that he puppet mastered this miserable woman.
And it also felt like not just no agency, but like her character just really doesn't have any, it doesn't have any like full three-dimensional like depth, or I don't know who she is outside of the horrible men that she has been with, or like the horrible man she kills at the end. Like it, like Evie, at least you understand who she is, and she like you kind of have this 360 view of her. But Rosemary just feels like this sad, abused lady who then is a pawn in V's whole chess game, but I don't quite understand how he did that.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
No.
Me neither. It didn't make any sense. Like, there were plot holes you could drive a Mack truck through.
Especially considering, like, I get that the chaos is a part of V's plan. Like, that makes sense. But then you can't say, yes, I plan for chaos, but then within this chaos, I plan for this woman to specifically go up to the leader of the country and shoot him point blank, you know?
Yeah, and it's going to work perfectly. They're going to
let her through. We're planning that Creedy, we know that Creedy sort of wants to sabotage Adam, and so he'll sabotage him by putting him out in public when maybe a lady could assassinate him. Like, all of these pieces do not fit together.
Either the plan is chaos or the plan is a plan. Like, you can't have it both ways.
Yes. It's very Joker, where Joker's things were all very thought through in Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah.
He had to plant a lot of bombs in advance of his chaotic plan.
A lot of work.
Yeah, it was almost, it's too neat. Like, the level of chaos that he's trying to invoke, and then for that to be, like, as she was walking through the crowd, I was like, even that's a little too far-fetched, just to let one lady walk through the crowd in this public moment. I'm like, this is a little too far.
Well, they're all scared of her murder powers. Get her out of the way. Keep her away from the men. They'll die if they get too close.
You know, I'm thinking of myself if I was in that society, and I would fully be like, stay away from her. Like, I would be one of the people pushing that lore about her as well.
She's a black widow.
She's cursed. Don't sleep with her.
And then there's the other wife of a top party member who is deeply fascinating. And Jennifer,
I'm kind of obsessed with Helen Hare. She's not a good person, but I am extremely interested.
Like, she's bad, but also she kind of bad.
Yeah. She's bad in a fun way. And we meet her really in book three. Jennifer, will you describe her for maybe people who haven't read it?
So Helen Hare is just enthusiastically sexually dominating every man who comes into her proximity. I think the first time we see her, she's yelling at her husband, like always. The next time we see her husband is like kneeling before her and toweling her off as she emerges from the bath. And then he tries to go down on her and she like kicks him away.
He's
so, it's very interesting that in this society, every man, and she goes on to have an affair with, what's his name, Allie?
Allie Creedy, the Scottish gang guy.
The Scottish guy. Yeah. Scottish.
Wait, is Creedy the same as Allie?
No, Creedy is the head of the Finger, who's the evil policeman. And Allie and Creedy have an alliance. Creedy sort of wants to...
I thought you said Allie Creedy, and I was like, I'm so confused now.
No. Both Creedy and Hare want and need to use Allie's gang powers to get the chaos power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Helen Hare wants to be Evita. and you know what? It almost works out for her. She's having an affair with Allie, so she can use his brute force to help elevate her husband to the position of High Chancellor. And they end up killing each other in a lover's quarrel over Helen. So it doesn't happen, and she is pretty mad at her husband for fucking things up that way.
I love the negotiation of price that she has with Allie for his services, where she's like, well, how much are you getting paid by Creedy right now? And he was like, oh, like 500 a week when it's 400 a week. And then she's like, wow, I really would have thought he wouldn't pay you more than 400.
400. Yeah.
Like, where are you coming at this
where
price
did she come
for
from?
Mercenaries?
What was Helen Hare's background before
that's
this?
What I want to know, too.
Lady Macbeth in a regional theater production.
Definitely. I got very Lady M vibes from her.
Because, like, how did she get her power in this society of just being...
She's the only one.
She's the only one.
She's really interesting as a woman in this society. She's obviously a terrible person, but it just feels so unlikely that any woman would have this capacity to dominate people.
Yes. Have you? Especially the ear.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he becomes the... V uses, like, the voyeuristic thing of the cameras to cause the chaos.
To outsmart her
in his perfect, like, puppet master way, which seems like a sort of like a line from like a Bob Dylan or like a folk song, like, oh, and the voyeurs on the CCTV. Just like that, the classic idea that like, oh, be like he uses their tools of mass surveillance against them. And
can
we're all perverts.
Sing it like Bob Dylan?
No.
What I was going to say was her level of power as a woman in this society where women are just like massively disempowered kind of reminds me of Serena Joy in The Handmaid's Tale.
Mm.
But like the adaptation of The Handmaid's Tale, not the book The Handmaid's Tale. Because I feel like Serena Joy has a lot more power in the screen adaptation versus the book.
But here's the thing about Serena Joy. She at least has to have the effect of being like a dutiful wife.
Mm-hmm.
That she feels honored to have this home and this husband to follow. Helen Hare so clearly doesn't
give a
have
fuck.
That pretense at all.
No.
Like the first time we see her, she's being really shitty to her husband. And Rosemary's like, she's kind of a mean lady. And Rosemary's husband says, fuck you. Helen Hare is awesome. And we all like her.
She's
so
like that
sexy.
Her level of like sexual manipulation isn't even understated. It is so just outrageously
just
in your face.
To
it's
11.
Just cranked. Yeah, it's cranked to 11. There's no pussyfooting around about it. It's just like, I didn't even mean to say that. I'm embarrassed.
Sometimes also these comic book women are drawn in a way where I'm like, David Lloyd, you had a day drawing those boobs, didn't you?
Oh my God.
Oh, her enormous boobs. Her just you massive just, watermelon size
just
boobs.
Just enormous boobs.
Oh yeah. When she's like, look what you're missing.
Oh, you had a day drawing the, like, cabaret ladies with their asses, like, out to the stages.
80s comic book artists loved drawing boobs and butts. It's their favorite thing.
Dana and I wrote for She-Hulk, and so we spent a lot of time with those She-Hulk comics. And my God, they are so horny for She-Hulk. Like, it just, like, the way their boobs would, like grip to shirts in a way that was like, oh, they're gripped like under the boob and to the side of the boob, and it's just like a blouse in a way that's like, that's not how gravity works.
The clothes are like painted. They're painted. It's like painted on.
But only for part of it. And then there's like a little bit of a blouse for, you know, demure.
Because if we
don't do that.
I was saying, if we didn't see the line of the boob, how would we know she has boobs?
Yeah, at every you're point? Absolutely really right.
Saying otherwise.
Adjacent to that, too, just to touch on like how this particular illustrator is portraying women. Every time Evie screams, I'm like, this is a grotesque portrayal of this woman's face that, yes, like towards the end I was like, this is a different person.
I had that note too, Tien, that like she is, I think, like 15 different women in this book. Yeah. Like in the beginning she's like a little scared Lolita-esque drawing, yes, and then she becomes like when she's with that nice guy, you know, lives with him, she's like a 70s sitcom lady.
Yes.
And then she goes and is tortured and she looks like 105 years old.
Absolutely.
She becomes a hag.
And then in this chapter, like I had it open to this page, I don't know if you see, she looks like Jennifer Grey-esque.
But then, yeah, like, she looks kind of like an X-Man.
Screaming face.
Oh my, that screaming.
She looks like a gargoyle off the side of a building that also is like the gutter that sprays water.
But then, what's that face? Yeah. That's like,
this is all like, very great for an auditory
she
medium.
She looks like Cloris Leachman there.
I'm going to be back real quick. I'm just going to write a manifesto. Be back in a jiff.
I did want to make one more point about Helen Hayer, maybe, sorry, before we move on to women in general. No, this is essential. Have any of you read or seen the film The Wife?
Oh, yes. Yes. No. Oh, I love it.
So it's a different dynamic. It's not like a sexually dominant dynamic, but the titular, I'm going to spoil The Wife, but it's not a spoiler. You know it, the whole thing, and it's just whatever. The titular wife in The Wife is a wonderful writer, but it's like 1950 in America, and she knows that her books will like never get the attention or acclaim that they'll get under her name as they would under her husband's name. So she like makes the decision that like, you're going to publish my books and we're going to have this partnership and we're both in on it and this is our relationship. And that a little bit feels like a muted version of the Helen Hayer thing of like, I can't be the face of who's in charge. So I am going to use you, my husband, as the man puppet for me to get my agenda across.
I feel like, though, I don't think her husband was as in on it.
No.
I don't think it was. I feel like it was like a Rebecca type deal where she like got married to him and she was like, great, we're not going to have sex. I'm going to like withhold sex from you. And you're going to be in charge of the ear. And I'm going to make sure, or was he the ear or the mouth?
He's
Whatever, he was.
The ear, I think.
He was the eye because he had the cameras, right?
Oh, yeah. He liked watching
people. The propaganda, the visual thing.
Yeah.
You're right.
The voyeur without seeing. But... So she's like, you're going to be in charge of the eye because I say so. And that's how I'm going to get to the top. Like, it was hardcore Lady M energy.
You don't think that it's a consensual BDSM relationship?
I think he's pretty into it. She makes it clear at the very end that she's going to have sex with him because she's going to be in a good mood. I don't think it's healthy.
Yeah.
I don't think it's healthy.
I don't think it's a healthy expression of it.
I think he gets off on it. I think he likes it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get that sense just because of that scene where she's with Allie.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
She's like, the cameras are off because they had that sort of blackout of surveillance. And then she's got her like 80s tint and she's like pointing them at the camera, which she thinks isn't recording anything. And she's like, haha, look what you're missing. And then later he flies into and like furious rage, and that's why he ends up killing Allie.
Oh, you're right.
No. Mm-hmm. I think he's furious because his wife is sleeping with another
yeah,
man.
That's what I gathered from yeah. that exchange.
I mean, I think it's both. I gathered that
as
well.
He saw her when she was in the tub. Like, he was toweling mm-hmm. her off. He clearly sees her tits on a regular basis.
Right, but I don't think he gets to touch them on a regular
no.
basis. And
I agree.
That's
he does not. Yeah.
yeah. I mean, I was reading it, and I was like, what a cuck.
Indeed, he quite literally
yeah,
is.
Yeah, he really mm-hmm. is.
Oh, poor man.
Okay, so that's
poor man. Okay, what did you think of the ending regarding
the
Helen Hayes?
Hang on, we gotta go back to Jennifer
wait a
saying
poor man.
Poor man
he's part
for,
of the Norse. He's part
he's
of the
okay,
Norse.
He's part of like the fascist ruling class. I guess, well, that's not good, obviously, but... Well, it's sad that he's in love with his wife and she is sleeping with another man. But they're all bad people.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah,
thank
he's
I would
not...
like to say, I got a lot of shit for saying that the cabaret seemed like a place I would want to hang out. I think we should give Jen just a little bit more shit for feeling
both,
bad.
Honestly,
yeah.
both of you equal. Bad Jen... cabaret and fascist sympathizer.
Conrad,
no! Conrad Hayer. That instant of his life seems sad.
Okay, it but does. Colin Hayer deeply sucks.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the Conrad. Ending with Helen Hayer, I don't believe that rape is an appropriate punishment for everyone and for anyone.
For,
and
I was
going to
say
really
for everyone.
It's also
for anyone. I really don't care yeah. for that ending.
No, I don't either. No.
And it also yeah. was just such a weird tag. Like, what a choice to end on that. Like, it's hard enough. The choice in and of itself is like, oh, she's going to be raped. That's her punishment is rough. But it's like, yeah. and also that's going to be the ending of V for Vendetta. It's like,
we can all feel happy about Helen Hayer getting raped.
As opposed to like, I was like, wait, I turned the page being like, that's not, that can't
yeah.
be the end of it though.
Yeah,
and
that's the
was.
Tone he wants to end on, that the sexually manipulative woman is going to be in a forced, violent, sexual submission.
Yeah,
I think in my mind, I had transposed the two parts of the ending. And after I read it, I immediately was like, oh, she had the bad thing happen. But then we had Evie bringing that guy into the shadow gallery. And like, she's going to be the next V.
That is the fucking yeah. end yeah. of the...
yeah.
the
in
end.
My brain, I made that the end. I was like, this makes
well,
sense.
Well, that would be better.
That's a way better ending because it's almost like
a little optimistic
and it has hope for the future. And then it's like, wait, one more page. We forgot to rape a lady.
Look, I also just don't believe that Helen Hayer is going to be kept down for long. Like, that woman seems remarkably indomitable.
Metaphorically, right? Not literally.
Oh, yeah. No, metaphorically. Okay. No, she's obviously going to be raped horrifically. And Alan Moore yes. seems psyched about that. And it's a note he wanted to end on. But, I'm not saying I want a sequel that's just Helen Hayer once again taking over society in a ruthless way. But if it existed, I would read it
you
and
know,
I'd be interested.
You know what, Jennifer? There are more than enough stories about like awful men rising through the ranks of power
oh,
and
yeah.
how and why they do it. It would be interesting to see one about
I'll
a deeply
like
awful
a Red
woman.
And the Black version
I would love
of
it.
Helen Hayer's rise to power.
Like also, Wicked.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's actually. You know what? I want it to be a musical.
Then I'll book Wicked.
Like Evita.
So.
Yeah, like Evita. Just like Evita. I want Madonna to play Helen Hayer.
I literally meant the book Wicked, though. I just want to make that very clear. Not the musical.
I also think that this sort of goes into like why Alan Moore is bad at women. One, because he sees them all as sexual objects, and like. All of their problems are like sex-based. Like there's Helen Hayer, who again is just like a cardboard cutout of a dominatrix who then gets what she deserves in his opinion, mm-hmm. not in my opinion. Evie with her like weird daddy issues that he goes way too much into. And then Rosemary, who again, it's like her relationships with men put her in this very like sexually vulnerable position. And then she is not even a person who makes decisions. She's just a pawn in V's plan. Like, every woman has some deeply weird sexual thing with her in this graphic
except
novel.
Except Delia.
Oh, she's cool. Oh, yeah. I forgot about her.
And Valerie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, Valerie is on that chapter is like genuinely so sweet and nuanced.
It's really
and yet
beautiful.
We don't get that with anyone else.
It is.
But the unfortunate thing is that it's the same issue of like queer people always dying in literature.
Yes.
Happened again.
And Delia also now has to be in a relationship with Finch, which she didn't have to.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah. That was weird that they threw that in there.
They're just like, and we're sleeping together, by the way.
Well, I think it's interesting that, to your point, Dana, I think the one thing that is, I think, an interesting challenge about these kind of like authoritarian dystopias is that they're usually like patriarchies. And so these women are so reliant on men for survival that like even when Evie is kicked out, she does have to like go find shelter with this man. And I think that's why Handmaid's Tale is so interesting. I mean, I have not read it. I've only seen the adaptation. But, you know, in a woman's hands, that this that you can find like stories that are separate from men. But I think that is a challenge to do in a, like a patriarchal authoritarian regime that you're setting your story in.
I guess I have less of an issue with like with Evie being like reliant on men and more of an issue that like, I don't know, the daddy issue stuff. And
I agree with your issues. Yes. I just was trying to see, like, I think it is a challenge. And then if you don't have that perspective, you're going to just kind of fall back on tropes.
And I also think in Alan Moore's defense, I think so much of V for Vendetta is meant to be like making a larger political point. So characters fall by the wayside because he's trying to make his argument in a way that comes across.
Yeah, it's a manifesto as much as it is a piece of art.
Well said,
I think the tiny glimmer of, like, him potentially being more thoughtful about it is that, like, the one little girl in the book with the glasses is the one that, like, one of the first outside characters that, like, takes up, you know, graffitiing V onto the street, which to me is, like, you know, in lesser hands would have gone to, like, a little boy, you know? And I think that is like an interesting choice and a small detail that I loved and loved seeing. We'll talk about it later, but loved seeing in the movie as well, like that tiny little moment.
Yeah, some of the stuff in the movie, we were talking about it a little off mic that we'll talk to in our movie episode, but like little Easter eggs that are directly from the graphic novel that I think make it more satisfying.
I want to talk about Fate.
Oh, yeah. Karama, bring us on up to speed with Fate.
So Fate, as we've talked about, and I think book two was the like supercomputer that tells Susan what to do. And he's like kind of creepy in love with it. And then it says, I love you near the end of book two. And then in book three, it's heavily implied that he sleeps with the computer. Wasn't just me, right?
They have a sexual, it's an ex machina situation.
I mean, I was like, he found a drive and like just went to town. Like, that's the way I read it. floppy disk drive.
Karama.
It was the 80s. They used floppy disks. Excuse you. then you find out that V has access to Fate in the basement of his shadow gallery home that has like 8 levels and an elevator, apparently.
How has no one found this?
A plot hole that you could drive a Mack truck through, but again, manifesto not more than art, but as much as it is art. I thought it was interesting to have, for me it was frustrating because if he had access to this supercomputer and could then give messages to the government directly, it was just sort of like, why don't you make things better for some of the people while you're doing your business?
His scheme, Karama, his scheme.
It's all a scheme. I really liked it because it's like, this is the best episode of MTV's Catfish I've ever seen in my entire life. Just like V, like just thinking about V spending all that time flirting with what's his name?
Adam Susan.
Through the computer. It's so fun to think about, just like him back at the in his 8-story elevator home, just like sending sex through the fate computer to Susan. It's great.
It's just very funny because this was written in like the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. That it is very like early hackers kind of style stuff where it's like you can't really like these days, of course V has hacked into the supercomputer. Mm-hmm. Like that is the first right. thing a terror or not a terror, you know what I mean? What V would do. And it just, it's very funny. It's like, it's so simple that like, oh, I'm just going to like log into the supercomputer and just, and just talk to, and that's all I can do is just talk to him. Just like send messages on like a black and green screen.
ASL.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this was like 10 years before the movie Hackers. So he was really looking far ahead, I think.
And I mean, a historical catfish, and also very funny that with this power, he couldn't like disarm bombs or like do anything tangible for his plan. Forget like helping people. Having Adam Susan fall in love with him via computer, like, doesn't really affect his plan other than like he doesn't really need to do it.
He's doing it for, again, it's so V does these things for himself.
Yeah, that one feels like a personal pet project that he like dislikes. I mean, this high chancellor so much that like the best revenge is like, yeah, make him fuck this computer.
Yeah.
It does seem like it undermines Susan's sanity in the eyes of other people. Helen Hare points out that they shouldn't have him do a parade to restore confidence because he's insane.
Yeah. I think that, though, he does use it for concrete things at times. Like, he uses it to send all those, the mail, that mail thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Weird. Like, poems in the mail. I'm just like, I don't know if V knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't, if I got a poem in the mail, I would think it was just a direct marketing stunt. Yeah. I wouldn't think it was a call to anarchy.
Yeah.
Especially because it was not like anarchist poetry. It was just like, flowers are nice.
It's also weird that...
Have you seen a bird?
He has the foresight and, like, mental acumen to, like, manipulate every act of Rosemary's life and drive her to homicide. And yet he doesn't really know how to put that organization skill into any other aspect of his plan.
Yeah, the best thing he can do is, like, a postcards campaign. Like, I wrote postcards for and the last election.
That's my point. He has an opportunity to do so much good, and he sends people weird cryptic poetry in the mail and then makes a dude sleep with a computer. Do you all remember, like, 6 months ago when a bunch of people just got seeds in the mail?
Yes! Yes!
No!
What is this?
Like, in this year, 2020, hundreds of people, maybe thousands, I'm not sure, but a lot of people got mysterious seeds in the mail. And then the government was like, please don't plant them.
Did they ever find out who is... Well, now I'm curious. Did they ever find out who sent them?
And what were they? Didn't anyone test the seeds?
People planted them before they told them don't plant them. Yeah.
This feels like how Little Shop of Horrors gets started.
Ooh, that sounds fun, though. Like, just a little fun. Like a little carnivorous plant.
I was going to say, in terms of anarchy destruction... I would argue that Tyler Durden does something much better by destroying the records of credit card debt.
Yeah, I love Fight Club. I love Fight Club so much.
I'm gonna make a point, and I want both V for Vendetta and Fight Club are rare cases of the movies better than the book.
Yes, I would say that.
I've not read or seen Fight Club.
The book is not great. And even Chuck Palahniuk was like, the movie has a much better ending.
Yeah. The book I saw that movie poster in way too many dorm rooms that...
Here's the thing about Fight Club, and then we can move away from it. But Fight Club is another instance of you are not supposed to identify with the main character. And it's also one of those instances of people misreading the point. Like, it's an indictment of toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. And people are like, yeah, I want to fight and I want to make soap and I want to have insomnia. And like, that's not the point.
No, their lives suck and you shouldn't want to do what they do.
Mm-hmm. It's the sad cabaret, but with men and soap.
Can I also say something deeply embarrassing about V for Vendetta?
Yes.
I didn't realize that the circle and the V was an upside down anarchy symbol until like a few days ago.
I didn't realize that until you just told me that.
Me neither.
Okay.
I was driving in LA and I saw an anarchy symbol, and for a second I was like, oh, it's a V for Vendetta thing. And then
Jennifer and I also knew that all the chapters started with V. I'm just saying, you guys have to pick up on these clues, okay? Alan is dropping them. We need to pick them up.
Uh-huh. We're all going to print out all of these poems, and we're going to figure out the messages that he's getting to us.
So if someone mailed you an anonymous poem in the mail, you wouldn't overthrow the government?
No.
Somebody left a weird note on my car once.
They did that. They did that a while ago for some comics. I don't know, some maker of comic books, comic publishers. They sent this weird random letter in the mail to like various comic people's houses. And Dana, as you know, as somebody who has written comic books, comic fans are insane.
The worst.
They send death threats on like a regular basis. So we found out that this was viral marketing, fortunately, very quickly, because otherwise we were going to call the police. It was not reassuring to know that a crazy person had our address.
Yeah,
that's like that episode of BoJack Horseman, where they do the viral marketing for the show that he's on that has like, it looks like a ransom note. Yeah. He's like, oh, somebody knows what I did.
It was exactly like that. It was like cutout letters sent to our
house with absolutely not.
No indication. Yeah. I'm going to be back in just a minute. I got a bunch of poems in the mail.
So a brief full circle now back to V for Vendetta of plans that don't really make any sense. Finch, who is the detective on the case of trying to find out. I know I'm really bringing this back. Finch, who's the detective for the Scotland Yard. His plan to understand V, to get inside the terrorist's mind, is to go to Larkhill and drop acid.
Oh my God.
In a concentration camp.
I need to talk about that scene because, first of all, yes, dropping acid at a concentration camp.
What?
Weird.
Bad choice. I'm going to go on the record and say, don't do that.
Terrible choice.
Terrible choice.
Don't go to concentration camps and drop acid. No. I think we can stand for that as a podcast. But the second thing is when he was tripping, because like they killed all the black people in the society, he has this like hallucination that they're black people. And he's like, oh, I forgot how cool your skin was. Yeah. And I was like, yikes!
That was like a big yikes.
It was a huge yikes.
I will say, of all the things that we've read thus far as a book club, it took the longest to get to the weird racism in this one.
It came out with it.
They really bury the lead in this one.
Yeah, because Aldous Huxley was like, boom, page 3, saying some weird stuff about Negro eggs. But this one was a slow burn.
Like,
I knew that it was
three.
Racist as a society because they killed all the black people. But like that was where I was like, oh, I rooted for you before. And this was weird. You didn't need to do that.
It's like well-meaning racism where he thought he was really doing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he also makes it clear that he was on the side of killing all those people. Like, he misses them now, but...
Oh, yeah. Finch sucks. And also, Finch, I meant well-meaning racism on the part of Alan Moore.
That is what I read what you said as. Mm-hmm. He was like, trying to make a statement about how he is like weird and racist. I'm like,
he tried. But then Finch, who sucks, he's the one in the book who, spoiler alert, kills V and is excited about it.
Yeah.
What did you guys make of that?
Yeah.
He was like too excited.
I was kind of honestly sad that Finch was the one that took V down. Like, for everything that V stands for, and like, you know, as far as adversaries go, Finch is sad and weird and pathetic and like shouldn't have been the one to take down this idea of V, in my opinion. And just like, you're telling me he drops acid and kills the main character? Like, come on. That's terrible art. Yeah.
And, yes. And it also felt like I like the idea that he figures out where he is, like the station and stuff, I think. But the fact that he like bests him also physically and mentally feels strange. And also I think like we'll talk about the movie next week, but it's like he's always catching up, but he's always late, right? And that's what it feels like is the proper level of like he's smarter than the rest of these idiots, Finch, but he's not as smart as V. And I like the idea that V is like a part of his plan is his death, and I'm jumping to the movie, but it feels like not having V be a little bit more responsible for his own death feels like a bummer.
It also felt very weird to me that the arc that they're asking us to go on with Finch is that he goes to Larkhill and understands. He drops his acid to understand V. And then his next immediate move is to be like, ha ha, I killed him. I got him. Like, he didn't go through that acid at the concentration camp did nothing.
And then, like, walk past a woman, push a woman back into getting raped. And then it's like, he's the final frame of the story, which is very strange to me. Yeah,
with his pipe.
With his pipe. Like to go back to those last two pages that are so terrible, like, I can understand Alan Moore's reasoning of putting, like, chaos in the last two pages of, like, oh, look, this, like, best laid plans or whatever, like, it's still going to be bad. But to, A, specify it as rape for this one character, and also end it with, like, Finch walking down the road being like, man, what a journey. I'm like, he's not Poirot. Like, it's not his story. What are we doing here?
He is the grizzled hero. He dropped acid at a concentration camp and murdered V, and now on he walks.
Yeah, number and five I, on after the call pushing sheet, you know? Kellen Hare back into being raped, being gang raped.
And I think you're right too, of like asking V to be more responsible or more careful. Like, he literally has, taken responsibility for the very precise killing of Adam Susan in the parade with Helen Hire. Like, why would he let Finch just like pop him one in the subway? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
I think he wants to die. I think he's ready. I think he knows that it's time that the mantle gets passed on to a new person, and that person's going to be Evie.
Do it in a cooler way.
Totally. Yeah. Agreed. You organized all this. He's so theatrical. Yeah. He loves theatrics. You're going to die just by, like, a crazy guy with 5 o'clock shadow shooting
you? He's going to have a Viking burial. Like, he's going to be sent off.
He didn't even monologue.
He could go with a cooler death. I
mean, he did a little bit. He said the thing about ideas are bulletproof.
That's
and he's
true.
Like, this is my thesis.
And the whole riddle of, like, take off my mask, but don't see my face, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
She's like, wait, but how am I? She's 16. Dude. Also, just I think it's important to remember at that point.
Yeah.
She's 16 years old. She's like, how do I see your face if I take off the, I'm not supposed to, but I am. Okay.
I read that late. I read that late at night, and the panels were like, we think that she's taking off the mask. Each time I was like, oh, wait a minute. That's not.
Yeah. Also, I was like, I'm too tired. I did not like that the panels, I know it's not real, but that the panels showed a face at all. Like,
yes.
I thought that was a weird choice to me, because I thought the whole point is you never see his face. And it's like, so now we're seeing the imagined face that Evie, it just felt like it takes away a little bit of the
it
magic.
It tricked me.
The mystique.
It tricked me for
me
a little
too.
Bit.
It's like seeing a dame named Rebecca. You think you want it, and then you don't.
Whoa, bringing it back full circle.
So I will say I was unsatisfied by the ending. It just didn't hit emotionally for me when I think that the world is so theatrical and I wanted a big emotional hit.
Yeah. It felt very lackluster at the end. Book three, I found myself very angry and very confused for a lot of the time. Especially because, like, I don't think we should see everything. Like, I don't think it needs to be, like, every single thing they do needs to be in panels. Mm-hmm. But also, like, there's this point where V quotes some dude, Alistair, somebody I can't remember,
Alistair Crowley.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you. But, like, remember before, Evie doesn't know much about things. And then she's like, don't you quote Aleister Crowley at me. And I'm like, wait, when did she become like
super educational? Oh, she has a lot of books.
Educational.
She's been in V's place.
But we don't see that. Right.
But it felt, and then they mention it on the next page. And I was like, okay, I'm caught up. But it felt very weird at first because that wasn't who this character was.
Yeah, they did show her. Like we said, okay. So there was this specific, like, they did show her working out and, like, getting ripped. Because at the end, I was like, how did she pick up V and put him onto this, like, Viking burial? And I was like, because she worked out. So, Karama, I see your point. I see your point. Mm-hmm. We should have seen some reading from her.
Bench press with corpses.
Like, she's been reading a lot.
Yeah, just give us a little montage of her, like, reading and, like, doing pull-ups, you know? That's good.
The panel that was Helen Hayer getting raped could have been Evie reading a book. Just push everything back one panel.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. I tried to think about what an ending would be like that I would have liked more, and I had a very difficult time coming up with anything, though. I think the idea that Evie becomes V is really nice. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the last panel ending. I wanted Helen to meet up with Finch and him to be like, that's a great plan, Helen. You're right. Let's take over the world. We're the villains now.
Yeah.
To protect the world from devastation.
I do. It is, I think, satisfying that she puts on the mask. That felt inevitable. But it didn't have, like, comics can have a big, like, emotional impact. You know, like a full splash page. Or, like, I don't know, something about it didn't feel like, it's almost like I think some artists and writers think that, like, sometimes things are cliche, so they don't do them. But sometimes things are cliche because they work. And it's like, well, don't take those tools out of your toolbox because they work. So I kind of think that maybe Alan Moore was consciously like, I'm not going to give you like the big, clean, cathartic third act reveal that you want. When it's like, well, yeah, maybe that's like a classic structure, but it's classic because it is sort of proven in audiences like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to screw something into a wall, you're probably going to need to use, like, a Phillips head screwdriver. Sorry, that's just what you want to get that job done. And if you want a satisfying ending, there are some tools that you will need to rely on.
Okay, very Butch metaphor. Yeah. Love it.
Thank you.
But maybe as you've said before, that this is, like, manifesto art. Like, maybe he wanted it to be unsatisfying because, you know, revolution, anarchy, and trying to overthrow some sort of fascist government isn't like a one and done catharsis ending. And it's like a kind of how we feel, which is this, like, in
overthrowing the government isn't like a CW show. What are you talking about?
But I mean, you know, maybe that's what he was trying to go for. It's like all of this chaos has happened and, like, some people will move forward and walk off into the distance like Finch and not turn back. But, like, no one's going to get a satisfying ending from this.
But I totally agree with you that I think that that's what Alan Moore is going with. But I think that some things are so neat, like V being like, my last rose that I cultivated with Rosemary. And then some things are so messy where I'm like, one or the other. I think the idea that V has been formulating this plan for 20 years and it is like a perfectly orchestrated plan, like, that is very satisfying to me. And so I wish that, like, carried through to the structure of the end of the book.
And I think to me that didn't, like, I agree. I think that's what Alan Moore was trying to do with the ending. And I feel like it didn't land for me because they personalized it with this character of Helen Hayer, which feels like still V's plans are working, because she's a part of the system. and Finch, you know, bested V and he's walking off. Like, if it were, I think it would be more anonymous, like seeing the chaos and seeing the, you know, people being killed or raped or assaulted, like, as a, and it's like, oh, and the system, and it like continues to be good and bad are happening at the same time. But when you personalize it with this woman that, like, ah, she's getting hers, you know, it just feels like, oh, no. Yeah.
You don't see that much good happening. Would it be nicer if some people were growing a community garden?
Yes. I love that.
I love that. Because, like, that's a thing you can do with your neighbors that doesn't require organized leadership. Like, you could help your neighbors, and that would be nice, and that would show us that, like, while we may not be returning to the fascist system of government they had before, there can still be like communal projects that people work on together.
Jen, I think you should write a purge that's just about community
communal
gardening.
Communal gardening.
I said that. I said if it were the purge, I thought like that's the dystopia I would want to live in.
No rules. What are you going to plant?
It's one day. It's one day.
Just foraging.
Crazy good. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, what a great day.
Cancel student loans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
What would you, instead of the purge, what would you call it then?
Well, I mean, it's still the purge. Like, you could still
no rules,
people.
Just right.
Yeah. No rules, just right is lovely,
I love
Jen.
That. I love that.
It's purging.
But are you
debt,
copywriting,
you know?
It and making it no just rules, just right with a W?
No. Wow. No, I'm giving it to the people. I'm giving it to the people. That's who good. Want to grow a command.
No
rules.
Now I imagine with WRULES.
No rules.
No rules. Right. Just right.
It's also weird that if this is Alan Moore's manifesto, he doesn't leave. He doesn't make the end feel like hopeful or exciting, like you want to join V's movement.
I don't.
I'm like, this looks bad. It seems scary and bad. And it seems sort of like the people who have V avatars on bad internet forums. I'm like, oh, I sort of get it now.
Maybe it's so scary and bad to you all because you're stuck in the happiness prison.
There it is. Shave my head.
Happiness is a prison.
It is.
Get out.
But V did nothing but treat himself like a 19th century super wealthy aristocrat. He's surrounded by books and priceless oil paintings. He's always eating like fine foods. He's lording his superiority over women who live in his house and then being contemptuous of him. I'm sorry, V to me does not read as like a forward-thinking individual.
No, and
he reads as the most entitled rich man I've ever
And
met.
He's not a proletariat. He's not like out working in the fields, like with the means of production. He is, listening to his jukebox and reading Shakespeare. Go work the field.
As I can tell, he's not going to share any of those paintings with people. Those are his, and now they're Evie's. She got to inherit his house.
This supports my belief that V is gay and that he's not like a political dissent person that they threw in the camps. He's not, I don't think he's a person of color. Like, just in terms of the people that they were trying to exterminate in that camp and that they were experimenting on, the only thing is like a cis, like white gay dude that makes sense to me.
Yeah,
I think so.
I think that's also a good transition for next week because I think the V that we see in the movie is, I think he reads very gay to me, and I think he's very theatrical, and I like the way that character comes across more.
I love the
in
way
the
that
film.
Character comes across.
I mean, I get, spoiler alert, that they try to make him fall in love with Evie. I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
Not for a
don't
second.
Love it.
Are there any final notes on the book that you guys want to make before we close out?
I think I'll say, I think we've been, like, ripping apart the third book, but rightfully, but I really loved reading this book, and I think, you know, it is so compelling, and as someone, this is my first graphic novel I've ever read, and I think it brings you into a world so quickly and that feels so razor sharp, and obviously, much to Alan Moore's chagrin, extremely universal and extremely timeless, and could be about any current closing in on fascist society. That I really enjoyed it.
Really yeah. well said.
Yeah. Very well said. I don't know if I can top that, so I'm going to say something stupid.
Great.
But I think that more books should have weird dudes that want to sleep with a computer that's in love with them. More her.
Yeah.
More her in books.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Not enough women sleeping with tech. I'm just going to say that out
loud. That's true.
You know? That's a good point. Yeah.
I'm okay, making
there's
a
good
note.
Opportunity for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I feel like it would work better that way.
Okay, cool. I guess we'll write that.
Well, on that note, I think we have to end this here. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week when we talk about V for Vendetta, the film. That's our show for the week. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Dana Schwartz, and you can find me on Twitter at Dana Schwartz with 3 Z's. You can follow Jennifer Wright at Jen Ashley Wright. Karama Danqua is at Karama Drama. Melissa Hunter is at Melissa FTW. And Tian Tran is smart enough to have gotten off Twitter, but she is on Insta at Hank Tina. Our executive producer is Christopher Hesiodis, and we're produced and edited by Mike Johns. Special thanks to David Wasserman. Popcorn Book Club is a production of iHeartRadio.